Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news Monday evening. And of course, Edwin is with me for another rant. Hello, Edwin. How are you doing?
Martin, it's bedazzle me. Bedazzle, bewilderment, and everything else. You know, it's in your, it's, I mean, and to put it in your face, and it really just kind of hoodwinked the general population with taxes, fees, and more taxes. I mean, like I keep on saying to a lot of people across different industries and different sectors, I say everything is really great, looks really wonderful and shiny and glossy, just printed paper, right? Even the money, the new money that we're getting, new $100 bills and the new $50 notes that you get out from the bank, even they look that nice and shiny, but they don't get you as far as what they used to even 6 months ago. But you know, it's in your face. They're not even hiding it. It's poking the eye, but they just want to, like I said, bedazzle us with so-called fees and more taxes.
Yes. So I talk quite often about announceables, right? So announceables are things that governments make statements about or announce new, you know, things, be it policies or whatever, but actually they don't necessarily move the dial, but they want to be seen to be doing something. And Albo's latest on the migration, yeah, I'm not sure that it's really going to make a hell of a lot of difference. And more broadly, of course, we know that this has been a long-term issue. But finally, at least the government's talking about migration. I suppose that's a step forward, but it's all smoke and mirrors, really, isn't it?
Look, it is, Martin. This is the thing, right? This is the thing. And if you really listen to Jim Chalmers' statement on Sky News that I put up there, it's on my Twitter feed. And if you look at his the points there, we've covered a lot of these over the past from early this year. We've been covering a lot of this anyway. We called one of the points which we'll talk about a little bit later on. But when you look at it, and you pull it apart, it is scary. The general public need to be scared, Martin, because they're talking about tripling foreign investment fees on established dwellings. Since when have foreign investors been allowed to buy established dwellings? Is the first question we need to ask ourselves. But apparently, you know, if they increase the fees, if we triple the fees that they're going to be paying, they're now allowed to buy established dwellings. So that puts a further strain. And then, one of the things that you need to ask, with the first point is, do they really think that people that want to park the money here in Australia by illegal means or whatever means that got the money from overseas, if they want to park it here in Australia, do they really think that they're going to be worried about pittance of a couple of $100,000 penalty fees in order to buy and have something sitting there, whether it be a pretend rental, a short term rental, or let's put in some smart devices that'll turn the lights on and off, and it will also run the taps every now and again to make the powers to be believe that that it's occupied. That's the first thing. But it is scary. But it's in your face. It really is your face. And their solution is we're going to tax it more, and we're going to charge extra fees so that we can have carriage of this, and we can allow the millionaires and the billionaires from overseas, from abroad, to come and buy the homes where we're already squeezed out in many parts of Sydney, right? That's the first thing. Then it says doubling vacancy fees. I mean, the second point, again, Catherine Cashmore talks a lot about this, and we've been talking about it for a number of years with Catherine Cashmore from Melbourne with her organisation that basically been tracking the 1.2 or so million homes around Australia that are permanently vacant, that are owned by overseas investors or local investors, and they're just sitting vacant there and they've got the smart devices and they continue to do that. But again, the fees the fees in relation to the dwellings that are left vacant, is pittance again to the people that can afford this, right? And then you've got enhancing ATO compliance. Now, yeah, look, there have been a lot of chatter around the traps. There's been some investors have gotten scared, but the majority aren't, because they have bought properties under trusts. They bought properties under family members' names. They bought properties under friends' names and under syndicates. And this is what a lot of people don't understand. And I know the government does understand the many ways that you can buy property here in Australia. People say that it's very difficult. If you're a local, it's very difficult to buy under a trust and on a company and under a trust, because obviously the banks have got to have a stronghold of the property. Should anything go pear-shaped, they want to be able to secure their interest. So if you're going to be buying under a trust, generally the banks will only give you a 50-60% LVR, and you got to sump the rest. But if you've got the cash in hand, Martin, it's so easy to buy this under trust. Now, I've been talking about this, the shenanigans that's been going on in the financial sector as to how you can buy established homes in Australia. And I've been talking about this since early 2000s, because I used to attend meetings with prominent accountants, and this is when a lot of these things were cooked up, just before the Olympics. Now, and I've been talking about it ever since then. So you can still buy on the companies as well. So it really comes back to the borrowing appetite or the lending appetite of the banks to borrow to certain entities as to what entity you buy under. Obviously, if it's under a personal entity, that can chase it a lot quicker, and should anything go pear-shaped, as I said. But if you're buying it under a company or under a trust, which, by the way, if you're buying it under trust and you've got a company that sits as the trustee, well, guess what? The overseas investor just needs to be a director of their company, and it's all legit, right? Or appoint somebody here, a family member, an accountant, a friend, as the director, and it's good as gold. So this is the thing that a lot of people don't understand. I know the governments do, because they're allowing it. They haven't closed that loophole. And then the last point there, Martin, is the assisting developers to build, build to rent. Now, what did we say 2 months ago, Martin? We pointed this out.
We called it. Throw a bit more money in the face of developers, and they might build a bit more. Exactly. And again, I go back to my point, announceables, right? It sounds all good in theory, but when you actually parse it apart and ask the question, so who's going to benefit? What are the implications going to be? Then you start seeing huge holes in the argument. And, the bottom line is simply this, that they can mess around the edge here, but this isn't getting to the heart of the problem that we've got. And as we'll see later, listings are still well down, and the quality of the construction that we've had in recent years is putting more and more people under pressure. And we'll touch on that as well. And Albo can say, well, he's going to dial down migration. We'll touch on that in a second. But the fact here that these sorts of things are really just wanting to be seen to be doing something, but actually not really changing the trajectory from where it has been for some time, which of course has benefited those in the building and construction sector, but aren't necessarily benefiting, ordinary Australians. And that's the problem, isn't it?
No, that's right. And this is what we've been saying for a number of years, the first time buyers, the young people, and as you put out in your podcast not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago, it's the young people that got thrown under the bus, and they will continue to get thrown under the buses and under the new tram lines that don't work, that break down all the time, and they use this as cannon fodder. But there's, as I keep on saying, which is a statement that resonates a lot in me, and that is, things have got to break before you can fix them. And in this case, I still don't believe that things are truly broken. I really think that we're bleeding out, but it's not broken to the point where then you can fix it properly. And look, 2024, we're going to continue to bleed. The general public are going to continue to bleed. Those that want to go into get into the property ladder, be at a principal place of residence in the majority, it's going to be a struggle street, unless obviously you're down in Melbourne where numbers are absolutely surging. But they'll change that as well. And they'll continue to change that. On the one hand, you've got Channel 9 or all the other mainstream media pundits and AFR, and the government saying that there's, they're going to reduce the migration, but we're going to again, it's smoke and mirrors, and we'll split that open very shortly. But then on the other hand, Channel 7 put out a report that there's going to be 450,000 potential migrants going into Melbourne. Of course, somebody told the Premier there that the numbers are surging because they've been watching our show. And they've been watching the in comparison to Sydney, we're all, they're almost double the amount of listings on market, and things are struggling. A lot of the online commentators can see that as well, and a lot of commentary around that. Not as much as the mainstream media still haven't really picked up or come to terms with it as yet. The difference between Sydney and Melbourne, but that's what's happening. So on the one hand, you've got the government saying, yeah, we're going to reduce the numbers, but on the other hand, they're still saying, but we'll just, but Victoria needs a few more because, the listing numbers are surging, so we've got to control that market.
Absolutely. Yeah, pretty crazy. And we'll talk about the numbers a bit later on. But just on the migration issue, the AFR made the interesting headline that Labor resists making big cuts to overall migrant intake, and they're sort of messing with students, etc., etc. But it's not necessarily going to move the dial that much. And it's interesting because other people have sort of started to talk about this. Tarek put up a slide recently which just showed the components of annual population change and how net overseas migration has been driving it massively high, and of course we've seen that through some of the impacts. What's quite fascinating about that is if you then look, Shane Oliver put up a post saying, "Welcome the government visa overhaul, 185,000 fewer net arrivals over the next 4 years, but still 375 net migration this financial year and 250k in 24-25 budget." Going in the right direction, but still higher than pre-COVID averages and adding to housing shortage for a while yet. So, all of those in the know are actually saying, well, it's moving the dial, but it's not moving the dial very much. And it's again, this is announceable. This is being seen to be doing something without really doing much at all.
Yeah, and as I put that tweet up on Twitter, the translation to all this, Martin, when you break it all down, is the government's really calling for less Uber drivers. They're going to bring in less Uber drivers and Uber Eats drivers, bike riders. Hello, property buyers with sizable deposits, so they can fast track their visas. Individuals that are on net incomes of 135,000, they can fast track their visas by up to as short as 7 days. Now, tradies are still on the sideline, so we don't really want to bring in. We sort of, on the one hand, want telling the general public that we've got issues with construction, and there's not a lot of people going into the construction industry, but it's planned, right? There's a bigger plan to this, so they're still hindered somewhat. To come, this is skilled migrants for the building industry. Why? Because the unions are all over it. The unions are all over it, and they're not going to allow the government to bring in skilled labour workforce from Europe or English speaking countries. But if you're going to go, if you're going to move into the healthcare and financial sectors, well, it's 7 days, 7 days PR. But this is the point that we were talking about earlier on, Martin, is that all the smoke and mirrors. You're basically they're saying we're going to reduce the students in the majority. They come to basically they come to those pretend courses, and And then they disappear into the ether and become ghost migrants, and they basically take on labor work that the locals don't really want to attend to. That's a majority. But as I said, but in historically, or pre-COVID, it was mainly in the construction industry. But the new type of migrants that are coming in, they don't want to get into the construction industry, as I said. So it's less Uber drivers and less Uber Eats bike riders. But the group of people that the government are really pushing to come in to take advantage of these fast track visas are individuals, professionals, and they're not coming in with empty wallets. They're coming in with a bit of cash in hand. And may take them 3 months, may take them 6 months, may take them 12 months to settle down. But sooner than later, their appetite will be to house their families as well, and they will jump in, and that creates a problem in the for the local buyers. And when you've also stifled the real need for skilled migrants in terms of the skilled labor force in the sectors where the unions are very strong, they've got a very strong stronghold of, which is the construction industry. Well, guess what? You've throttled that area, and it's going to cost a lot more to build, right? It's going to cost a lot more to build. It's going to take a lot longer to build, and we're already tracking about 120,000 properties short of the promises. Since the 120, 160,000 probably short of the promises made by the Labor government that they were going to build. I don't know. Some are saying that this year's tally is going to be around 154, according to 154,000 dwellings going to be built between 22 and 23, according to SQM. The HIA are saying are talking closer to 130. Which is it? At the end of the day, we're tracking about 100, is it 120, 140, 160,000 short of the target. So we're still way behind. And as then Tarek puts up his tweet earlier today, he put up the tweet of the Albanese government's migration forecasts have been released. 510 in 2022 to 23, 375, 23 to 24, 250 in 24 to 25, a migration rate of 250,000 needs up to 170 dwellings, new homes, in net terms to start putting real upward pressure on vacancy rates. We're not going to get there. The bottom line is, we're not going to get there. So this is all smoke and mirrors. And some are saying we're not even, the pressure, the impact that the last couple of years, or the last 12 months to the next 2 3 years that are going to be created in the local market, it's going to be felt right up to 2030, and things are getting more and more expensive. So it's smoke and mirrors, Martin. It's when you start breaking it down and start analyzing everything that's put up and what the government says, what the gives it to you with the right hand and takes it from you with the left.
Yes, and it's worth just saying that those came from the MAIFO figures, which came out, and that's a Treasury forecast. Well, the Treasury has been so accurate on its forecasts of future migration, hasn't it? Ho ho ho! They basically were forecasting a lot lower rate than actually happened, so there was this massive surge. But the point is that even if it comes back a bit, you've got to ask quite rightly, and you're highlighting this, what is the mix of those migrants coming in? And, if a lot of them are actually able and willing to buy property, it still puts huge amount of pressure on the property sector. And I guess the other point is, we know that there are some other factors also in the mix in terms of more expensive construction as well. So, I think there's an important meeting tomorrow, which could also move the dial on construction.
Look, it is this is talking to the kitchen trade masters that Dusty talks to online on WeChat, and we actually had a face to face meeting last Friday with some of them, and this is rather interesting, Martin, that the kitchen masters are saying that there's a meeting tomorrow which will be determined that the government will determine as to what percentage. Of silicon quartz will be allowable in the engineered stone. You know, they don't know whether it's going to, is it going to be 2%, is it going to be 3%, is it going to be 5%, or if they're going to eliminate the engineered stone altogether. So whichever way they look at it, it is going to put an upward pressure on construction. And so this is what they're saying, because the kitchen, we're talking about kitchen bench tops here. We're talking about the engineered stone bench tops, otherwise known as Caesar stone or quantum quartz or whatever other name that fanciful name they importers have put into it. So this is the alternative to that is natural stone. Or potentially glass, which the a glass composite, which is already being manufactured in China and exported to America, because they eliminated the silicon quartz composite altogether years ago. But we're behind the apple on that. So this is where you end up with silicosis, where you end up with all sorts of respiratory issues. So that's going to put an upward pressure on it, right? So that's what's happening with the industry itself. Now, so on the other side, with the local chatter, as you put up that post there, with the local chatter, many trade masters that we've been talking to, or Dusty's been talking to, because I can't speak a word of Cantonese or Mandarin, of course, but Dusty talks to them, and they're all heading back to China. These are local trade masters. They call them trade masters here. They're basically business owners that supply goods and services to the construction industry. Small to medium SMEs, small to medium operators. Some are working, two-man crews, others have got 20, 30 workers. But the majority of them are going back to China basically to sell whatever they can in China and bring back the money back over to Sydney. Now, these are Sydney-based. I'm just purely talking about Sydney-based tradespeople. And they want to bring the money back. Why do they want to do this? Why? Because they can see that the Chinese economy is not getting any better. And if they can, because they've got PR here, because they've got residency here, they'll try every which way to get whatever monies they've got over there in China parked in property or any other investments. They'll try and bring it back to Australia. Yeah, by hook or by crook, they'll try the donors to get it back here to Australia. Why? Because they see that there's going to be further demands in the for property because of all these issues that the industry is facing. The cost of construction are just continuously increasing. There's less properties available. And obviously, these are people that are supplying trade services and goods to other property buyers. And the chatter amongst the WeChat groups, we've been saying for a long time, is very strong around purchasing property, getting rid of every other asset class that they may have and focusing on property. Whether they get a good rental yield or whether they don't, their focus is purely property. So this is what the Chinese trades are going. Now, at the same time, we've also been speaking with some of the silent tigers, professionals that are doing the same, Martin. These are professionals that have bought properties, investment properties, principal places of residence, and these are the silent tigers. And they're basically what they're saying to us is, look, our children don't want to go back to India, and likewise with the chatterers, they're saying that their children don't want to go back to China. They're definitely not going back to China to live there, and therefore, the best thing they could do is go back home, sell their assets. Now that the elections have gone past in India, in some of the provinces, so now they can basically sell their home, sell their whatever investments they have there, and they're bringing it here to back to Sydney. Again, this is just purely Sydney-based. I don't know what's happening with the chatter in Melbourne or what's happening with these chatterers and the silent tigers over in Queensland, but this is focusing predominantly in Sydney. So there's going to be my gut feel is, Martin, and based on the numbers, is that there's going to be a lot more upward pressure for in terms of prices, and people really got to be careful what they buy, how they buy, and where they buy, and you know, to a point also when they buy here in Sydney, because nothing that's being shared amongst the different information points that we look at, all these sources of information that we're looking at, is showing anything else other than it could be a lot more pain in Sydney in 2024 if the listings on market continue to trend in the same direction.
Absolutely. And it's another very, very important factor here in terms of what's going on. But I thought the information from our friend Bob the Builder was actually quite relevant here, right? Because basically it was an amazing sum up of what's going on. He says, hey, who are the winners here? You know, well, the truth is, with the cost going up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, there are some winners. Harry, for example, and whoever owns the lands in the first place. Very, very insightful comment. Mobile homes and builders will get a large chunk as they can build fast with little oversight. I mean, it is nonsense, isn't it? But you know, it's the way that the world is designed.
Yeah. So Bob the Builder, he's got a few mates in HIA. And in the headquarters, so he's reached out to them. I actually asked him if they had any numbers on estimates of on buildings to be completed between 22 and 20, beginning of the year and end of the year, and he said they do, but they don't want to share them. They don't want to make it public for whatever reason, but this is what he got back to me with, and it's interesting. Again, the cost across the board is going to increase by this is from the head office, that they feel that the cost is going to increase by a further 8 to 11%, as if construction and renovation costs weren't already relatively high. Obviously because of the energy costs. And remember how you and I were speaking about changes to BASICs and the NCC as well. We were ahead of the game, and this is it, Martin. This is why I called at the beginning of the year. I said that cost to build from the beginning of this year to the end of the year, we're going to increase by at least 20%, and I dare say we've gone closer to an increase of about 30%. But the other interesting point from there that Bob the Builder puts out is that when he refers to Harry Triguboff is one of the major winners. You also have to look at the other developers that are holding onto land and holding onto development sites. Two great big Christmas presents at the end of the year. Obviously, Jim Chalmers has already spoken about, which you and I spoke about 2 months ago. We said that developers are sitting on the sideline. They're waiting because they don't want to use their money to build. And they knew, and this is the meeting that I had with some big wigs a couple of months ago, and they were saying, why should we use our money when the government's going to be throwing money at us to build? And what did Jim announce over the weekend? Exactly that, what the developers had already told us 2 months ago. So that's the first Christmas present. And the second Christmas present is they're going to get a great big whopping yield, greater yield. In other words, they're going to get in a lot of areas of Sydney, they will be removing height restrictions, and they will be able to go up another two or three levels in a lot of the cases. Which was the case with Opal Tower, because there was government intervention with that. The New South Wales government, they still own some commercial property in there in Opal Tower, hence the reason why they were able to go up higher. Harry wasn't very happy at that time, obviously. Well, now guess what? He's going to be rewarded for being such a patient person. So they're the two big upsides. And at the end of the day, who pays, Martin? The taxpayer. We pay for it. We're going to be paying for it, lock, stock, and barrel. And when I say lock, stock, and barrel, we're going to be paying for it because we can't build high-rise developments. There's only a handful of first-tier developers that can build, and the rest that are going to get jump on this bandwagon are going to be building crap, are going to be absolutely building shit all over Sydney. And we're not only going to have million-dollar ghettos in next to Mascot Towers and around that area, but we're also going to have million-dollar ghettos just about everywhere across Sydney, because even apartments are going to be, fetching, two-bedroom, three-bedroom apartments are fetching close to $1 million in the West, which is insane, and the crap developments. And you brought out in our conversation before the rant, you brought out a post that said that some strata levies are being increased by up to 80%.
Yeah, this was an amazing thing that came out when one resident said her fees had risen from $4,681 a year to $8,357 a year, an increase of 79%. And it's like dealing with the mafia. Body corporate hikes fees 80%. This is actually a luxury South Bank complex. So we know that there are downstream implications, both in terms of higher fees, particularly corporate body corporate fees. But of course, also, as I made a poster earlier on, the number of properties with defects is more than 50% in New South Wales, right? So we know that we can build cheaper, because you can cut corners, and then you end up with defects that require fixing up later, which means that they're actually transferred to the body corporate, and therefore not only taxpayers are paying through the nose, but those who buy the properties are also paying through the nose. So it's a bit of a crooked game, isn't it?
Oh, look, it is. And this is what I'm saying. We're going to be paying lock, stock and barrel. And we're going to be paying now. We're going to be paying later. In the next few years, and we're going to be paying when these development sites are actually become the million-dollar ghettos all over Sydney. Why? Because as we've been saying, the developers will cut corners, and this is the and why do they cut corners apart from from trying to make an extra quid, is the simple fact that they're also under a lot of pressure from the government to build quickly. Yep. And this is one of the things that I try to tell a lot of people, is that there are reasons why you wait in between certain things that you do in a renovation. Things have got to cure, things have got to set, things have got to dry, things have got to be put in place properly, and they've got to be inspected, re-inspected again, because you've got a lot of unskilled labor, unskilled workforce out there slapping this shit up, pretty much overnight. And this is where things go terribly wrong, and this is where people pay good monies. I mean, over the last month or two, we've seen umpteen dozen reports. Even in the mainstream media of many people across the state in Melbourne and in the ACT and New South Wales, Sydney, because of shoddy construction. I mean, there are YouTube channels and inspector channels and that with millions and millions of views, because it's almost become a pastime. For people who watch all these dodgy buildings from homes, right up to your high rise developments, and how many, so we're building these, we're pushing the construction and we're pushing people into buildings that are unsafe, that aren't fit for purpose, they're getting smaller. There's less room in them. You're paying a lot more for them because of the cost to build is just continued to increase. But we still can't build enough to keep up with the demand anyway. So it's as I said, Martin. Unfortunately, we've been bleeding, but we're going to 2024. We're going to be hemorrhaging, and only God knows how much more our taxes are going to be increased, and how much more are we going to be paying to maintain this so-called progress that the government's pushing onto us now.
Yeah, progress, progress. Well, don't worry, because CoreLogic says the RBA board holds in December, but November rate hike may already have slowed housing markets. So CoreLogic is calling a slowing in house prices. So there you go. That makes it all right, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, Domain, I didn't send you the article, but Domain also put out a REB, the real estate business, put out an article over the weekend. I was reading the Domain are calling a rate cut early next year already. So I just focus on one thing, Martin. I'm just focusing very strongly on the numbers. That's right. You know, in the areas where we're looking at, I'm paying very close attention. Like I keep on saying, who is buying, who I'm going toe to toe with, who's my opponent, who I'm buying for, what they want to buy, how they want to buy, when they want to buy. That's it comes back to, at the end of, you know, with everything else for me, it just comes back to, in the team, it's the numbers that are on market in the areas that we're looking at for our clients.
Well, talking about the numbers, very good segue. So in Sydney, this is last week's numbers, we were at 15,635. And if we jump forward to this week, we're down to 14,625. So that falling trend in Sydney is continuing.
Yeah, look, it is. It is the end of the year. We say it's the falling trend just happened a little bit earlier than normal by a few weeks from your normal periods. For whatever reason, I think my belief is because of the uncertainty in geopolitical terms. The turtle, you know, stuck its head back into the shell. And also, if you're not achieving the price and you don't have a rental property to go to, as you basically sort yourself out and see where you want to, and you know, where you want to, you know, retire to, well, what's the point in selling if there's not, if the rental market was there was a stranglehold on the properties for rent on market. So yeah, that's. But what I've been doing now is just to put things in picture form, so that people can understand where I come from when I say that the properties on market have been a lot less throughout the year than in 2022 before we had this migration influx. And this is why has always been concerning. This is why I was speaking about it from the beginning of the year, and it's only just in the last few months that the mainstream are really picking up on the effects of the migration policies that you and I spoke about that were changed in 2019, and the greater effect. I mean, we're across it, you know, over 12 months ago, and this is the trend, Martin. Obviously, these are points that. From similar weeks, you know, week on week from the end of the year of 22 and the end of the year of 23. So these are Dusty's end of year Domain for sale listing numbers, Sydney 2022 and 2023. And there's your difference. There is your difference. Less demand in 22, greater demand in 23, and yet you've got less properties on market. I still don't understand why your Tom Panos indexes and all every other indexes are still calling higher numbers on market in 23 than in 22, when we've been tracking the Domain that's been our benchmark for the last 3-4 years. I can't see it. I can't see it when we're on the ground. The rest of the guys from the office can't see it when we're on the ground talking to the agents on the ground. They can't see it either. I know Tom had a meeting with Ray White office and they made 13,000 phone calls, of which they got 8,000 market appraisals. And I said, well, if that's the case, well, I called the mortgage cliff then, but it didn't eventuate. Eventuated to a few more listings here and there. But in overall terms, the trend, you know, in the Sydney market, in my view, is somewhat alarming. And if this trend continues into 2024, the same as it did in 23, numbers didn't build up until mid spring, and you know, winter was very, very frosty for many, and this is when property prices really started to shoot up. So look, for the sake of the people that are looking at buying, all I can say is just be diligent, be very, very, very diligent in who you're going to be standing against at the auction if you're going to be buying under an auction scenario, and if it's a private treaty, take your time in doing the greater due diligence to make sure that you're getting the right goods, because at the moment, it's not looking too pretty for buyers in Sydney. Melbourne's a different kettle of fish.
Well, let's look at the Melbourne numbers because, of course, we've tracked higher listings through in Melbourne through the year. 26,041 based on the 4th of December. And if you look forward, it's 25,424. So a slight easing, but a much larger number on market. And that's been pretty consistent through the year. And one of the reasons why, in fact, the CoreLogic data showed a decline in net property prices in the Melbourne region over the last month.
Yeah, and again, it goes back to listings on market. We religiously look at them. Obviously, we don't just look at the Domain platform. We use Domain because we've been sharing the Domain figures for, as I said, for a number of years on the show. But we obviously look at the other platforms as well. But it's the definition of region is different across the different platforms. But the trend nevertheless across the board is consistent as far as we're concerned. That predominantly for us, it's also what the real estate agents are saying on the ground in the areas that we're looking at. But look, the other thing in relation to numbers for Sydney, Melbourne still, people still want to escape the Melbourne market, so they're still pretty high for this week. But the numbers for Sydney have really come down from your 900s, your low to mid 900s to 735 for this upcoming week. And I dare say that number will change to about 520 by the end of the week, because a lot will come off. Will be withdrawn or get bought before the auction. But there's really not a lot of joy for sellers. Look, even Tom said in his last post over the weekend, he said that he had a low count. I think it was 3 in 10 that he sold on the weekend that were sold under the hammer at his calls over the weekend. And but he said that there was a 3 or 4 or so that didn't sell, and the highest bid was only 20,000 or so apart from what the vendor would accept, which I thought it was pretty crazy. When you're that close, you certainly put it together. But as I said, Martin, if the agents are saying to you that you're going to get $2 million for your home, and it comes shorter than the 2 million that the agents have promised you, and you've got really nowhere to go, people are going to sell. Only sell. And what Tom's pretty much saying, what I heard in what he was saying in between the lines was, they're going to wait till next year to see if they achieve the higher price. But to be 20,000 apart and not take the highest offer on the day, I mean, look, was it really 20,000, or was it a little bit more? Did Tom embellish the story a little bit? But at the end of the day, I'm just saying, well, okay. But then then to say, people are using that now as see, there was only three, even Tom only sold 3 in 10. Well, no, that's not what he said. The others were very close to the mark as well. So who knows? So this is. Well, that's the auction arena. That's another an area which is somewhat entertaining. I like to take the piss out of them most of the time. I enjoy the shenanigans in terms of participating on the day of the auction as well, the theatrics, and people have got to learn and understand that, hey, if the auctioneers do it, if the agents do it, as long as you're not colluding, as long as you're not colluding with another buyer, it's all fair.
It's a game. It's a game.
Yes, it is. It's a game. It is. It's a game.
Absolutely. Well, let's just quickly look at the rentals for Sydney. Last week we had 11,451 listed, and interestingly, this week it's gone up to 11,609. So the rentals are going in the opposite direction to listings,
which is good. It is good, but based on your surveys as well, we discussed before, and that is because there's a lot of share accommodation. A lot of people are going; they can't afford the full rent. I don't know what the breakdown could be in terms of how many short-term rentals are also coming back on the rental market for a long-term. But at least it's a lot better than just seeing over 8,000 listed for rent on across the Sydney region, which is scary. But it's still very low, Martin. At the end of the day, in years gone by, when I was managing the rental book, between the Parramatta LGA and the Blacktown LGA, you got close to 15,000 just between the two LGAs, let alone the rest of Sydney. So it is a positive move, but the other side of that coin also is based from your surveys and what we've discussed, is that there are a lot of people that can't pay the full rents, and so they're sharing.
Absolutely. And we're seeing more people moving back with parents, getting into shared accommodation and all those things. We'll see a lot more of that, I think, over the next few months because, again, looking at the data from my surveys, we are seeing a number of rent leases coming up for renewal in the early part of next year. And in each case, what we're seeing is considerably higher rents being demanded from landlords. And, rental stress is really, really high. In fact, next Tuesday, I'll go through this in more detail on my live show, and we will go through the data at a postcode level because it is very, very granular. You need to understand the dynamics in different locations. But the general point is that we are seeing a lot of those in the rental sector with cash flow pressures. And the only way to solve that is to move into somewhere cheaper if they can find somewhere, or move in with families or friends. Or, of course, and this was a really disturbing picture, there was a piece of video released showing the tent city on the Brisbane River in the centre of Brisbane with, I think, more than 70 tents now. So people are actually, having to live in tented accommodation, which is pretty astonishing, at the time when the Premier has just resigned and the new one is going to be brought in. This is a symbol of the failure of the total housing story in Australia. The fact that now we've got tent cities, and this was just one example, but there are other examples in other places too. We're relying on tent cities and people living in cars and things. I mean, this is a bit of a disgrace, isn't it?
Look, it is, and if you recall, in the first or second show of the year, when Dusty and I put out our predictions, what did we say? We said that tent cities will start becoming the norm, and it should be a black mark against the state premiers. And I'm not biased towards the left or the right here. I mean, this started with the Libs, and unfortunately, it's the Labs now that are holding the steering wheel. It's the left and the right wing of the same vulture. I'm just trying to look up the what prediction it was. On the post, the prediction number four, it was caravan in tent cities will be the norm as rental stress increases. That's
unfortunately, it's it's come home, and you know we've highlighted through the year the building of temporary accommodation. You know, these sort of instant builds, the tents, the caravans, you know, couch surfing, all of those things. It's a real mess, and you know, we don't know the long term consequences in terms of you know, people's welfare and also the structure of society. But you know, this to me is a symbol of a real set of stresses that society is going to have to deal with. And unfortunately, the politicians seem a little bit immune to actually wanting to tackle it, which I find amazing, really.
Yeah, and look, and this is the point that you keep on stressing out, and you have over the years. And this is where you've got to look at properties, and you've got to look at markets very, very granular, even from the rental side of things. And as I'll try to explain to a number of people over the years, the difference between, even over the last 12 months, where it's becoming more and more apparent, the difference between the listing numbers on market between Melbourne and Sydney, and why did the WeChat chatterers about six, seven weeks ago called the groups to get out of Melbourne? It's because, again, it's when you start drilling down into the nitty gritty, you've got on market in for sale, you've got 12,925 homes as of 4 o'clock or so this afternoon on my, like, these are freestanding homes in Melbourne, in the Melbourne region, and in Sydney, you've got as of around 4 o'clock, you've got 14,625. I think it's a lot less now, but in terms of homes, it's 6,248 freestanding homes. Now, the dynamic with that is, and this explains why the WeChat chatters wanted to get out of Melbourne, and you've got a lot more homes for sale in Melbourne, it's because of, as you've said and you've pointed out from your sources down in Melbourne, a lot of these home and land packages are in areas of the Melbourne region where the WeChat chatters couldn't really do what they do here in Sydney, and there is no clusters of little brothers and little sisters that will rent the rooms or they can't get into budget accommodation, and it's more your traditional markets, and hence the reason we've got these huge discrepancies in terms of homes for sale down in Melbourne region as the homes for sale in the Sydney region, and why the appetite's very, very strong for the WeChat chatters to buy freestanding homes in the Sydney region. Now they're obviously flocking back to the older style apartments closer to the transport hubs that could convert from two bedrooms into four bedrooms, eliminating the kitchen and just putting a gully kitchen down the corridor. They're the things that we've shared with our viewers, we've shared with our followers, to put them in the picture, as to give them a better understanding as to why people are buying, what they're buying, how they're buying, and when they're buying.
Spot on, absolutely. And we'll just finish off the numbers by looking at the national rentals. So last week, 45,315 across the country. And if you jump forward to this week, it's up to 45,758. So a few more properties being listed at the moment compared with last week. And again, those numbers have been rising, you know, reasonably substantially compared with where we were, which is an interesting observation. But of course, the issue also is, Edwin, that a lot of people now can't afford to pay the rental price to get and buy the rent. So maybe it's not surprising that the number are on listing are rising, because there are less renters physically able to commit at the moment. So this is not necessarily a completely good sign. We know that. No, I think the next 12 months or so, with high inflation and with the high cost of living more generally, because the inflation number doesn't actually tell you the real impact of real households. And I go back to my surveys, more than 70% now of renters are actually finding cash flow pressures. So a lot of people can't commit to going back and into the rental sector again, looking for other alternatives. So as we come to the end of the show, Edwin, you, of course, always have a tip of the week, and this is another goodie.
I guess it's the heat, Martin. So Heath, you know, the tip for this week is just stay frosty. And if you feel a little bit dehydrated, don't go into the auction dehydrated, because the emotions will run away, and you're going to end up paying a hell of a lot more than what you really wanted to pay. So make sure you're hydrated. Take plenty of liquids. You know, drink a lot of cordial beforehand. Get the sugar levels up. Because you know, at the end of the year is usually when there's a lot more shenanigans that goes on with agents, because they also want a quicker sale. And you know, and have a little bit of fun, as we said. Also, you know, one of the incidents that we had with one of our clients is the agent was pushing us to make a pre-auction offer on the property. And I said to my client, I said, "Listen, we're going to go easy on this. We're going to go slow, because the agent was about, you know, he's very vocal, you know, to with all the inquiry that were present at the couple of open homes that we attended with our client as well. And it was very vocal, Carl, saying, you know, there's basically there was an offer on the table which was $200,000 above the starting guide point." I said to our client, as we were walking through, I said, "Look, stay calm. Just listen to what they say, what they'll say, and everything, and we'll call their bluff." And the way that we called the bluff was, we obviously the auction was the auction was the on Saturday, and but before that, we inspected the home a week and a half prior to that, and I said, "What we'll do is we'll get our building inspector to make an appointment to inspect the property." And obviously the agent will call me and will say, "Oh, look, you know, Edwin, you know, we've already got a building report, blah, 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 this, that, and you can, you know, move quickly. We've got a hot offer on the table, this, that, and the other." And I said, "That may be the case, but when the agent says that, I'll just tell them, look, we don't rely on agents' reports or vendors' reports. We always make it a point to get our own, and we always, you know, get our clients to get their own as well. So we will appoint one." But what we did is we told the building inspector to say that he was tied up, call the agent, and rather than having the building report a week, you know, about a week and a half ago, I said, "Make sure it's midweek before, you know, midweek before the day of the auction. So if there is a genuine offer on the table, we'll flush them out." Come Saturday, there was no other party that had allegedly put in a bid, a pre-auction bid of 200 above the guide. And I said, "See, there you go. Yeah, there are ways." I said, "Look, this is just a tip." So look, the tip is that was an experience of ours, but the tip is just stay frosty. Just stay frosty, you know, delay things. If you're not sure, because they will be saying by hook or by crook, they'll be telling you that we've got offers of this, and yeah, use that strategy. You're more than welcome. I don't have a I don't have the full rights to that strategy. You know, it's not patented or anything. Just delay it. Delay it a couple of days. You know, do your own building and pest. Get your building's pest inspector to make an appointment, you know, a couple of days before, and that forces them to go to auction. And that way, you'll know if there's a genuine party that you're going to be going toe to toe. I prefer, as I said to our client, I said, "Listen, it may be true. It's a 50-50 call, right? I mean, you know. So we got to flush it out. We got to flush it out, and we did. We flushed it out. There was no such party there that had offered more."
No, but you make a really, really interesting point about you can use time to your advantage, right? And sometimes acting ultra quick isn't necessarily the best strategy, because sometimes then the vendor or the agent gets the impression of more enthusiasm. And of course, if there's more enthusiasm, they feel that there's probably more opportunity to, you know, to negotiate higher. So sometimes just being a little bit cool, right, and playing for a little bit of time and allowing things to just move at their own pace is a really, really good strategy. And it actually takes a little bit more guts to do that sometimes, particularly if you're interested in a particular property and you really want it. But sometimes jumping in with both feet and, you know, being forced to negotiate higher as a result isn't necessarily the best strategy, but you've got to take a few breaths, haven't you?
Yeah, like I said, stay hydrated.
Exactly.
Sunstroke. Just slip, slop, and slap. And then when you get to the day of the slip, slop, make sure you slip, slop, and slap, and you just hold them there for a very, very long time. You just got to have fun, Martin.
Exactly.
The world is getting crazy.
Yeah, it's certainly a crazy world. But anyway, we're going to be back next week for a normal show. And then the week after that, believe it or not, that's Christmas night. But what we're planning to do, Edwin, is we're going to have a live show on Christmas night. So you can get the old Christmas decorations out and wear the hat and everything else. And we'll have a bit of fun. And if anybody wants to join us live on Christmas night, having had hopefully a very enjoyable Christmas day in a couple of weeks, we'll be able to entertain and also get some questions from the audience live, if that works. So looking forward to next week and also the following week. And, well, who knows? The politicians still have some runway to surprise us even before Christmas, don't they?
Oh, look, they do. So it's another week of shenanigans. Let's see what they get up to this week, and we'll talk about it the following Monday. All the best to you, Martin. Stay safe.
Take care. See ya. Take care. Bye-bye.